Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Speak On It, Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, B. Chad, and I have the privilege of having some very detailed, depth conversations with you tonight on the tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We want to say happy MLK Day to all my listeners out there. And the conversations that we will focus on tonight will be a tribute to Dr. King, his legacy, and what do we now owe in furthering the legacy of Dr. King. I would like to play a clip from one of my favorite segments that I think summarizes his legacy and what the show would be about.
I'd like to use as a subject from which to speak this afternoon the other America. And I use this subject because there are literally two Americas. One America is beautiful for situation. And in a sense, this America is overflowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey of opportunity. This America is the habitat of millions of people who have food and material necessities for their bodies, and culture and education for their minds, and freedom and human dignity for their spirits. In this America, millions of people experience every day the opportunity of having life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in all of their dimensions. And in this America, millions of young people grow up in the sunlight of opportunity. But tragically and unfortunately, there is another America. This other America has a daily ugliness about it that constantly transforms the buoyancy of hope into the fatigue of despair. In this America, millions of work-starved men walk the streets daily in search for jobs that do not exist. In this America, millions of people find themselves living in rat-infested, vermin-filled slums. In this America, people are poor by the millions, and they find themselves perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. In a sense, the greatest tragedy of this other America is what it does to little children. Little children in this other America are forced to grow up with clouds of inferiority forming every day in their little mental skies. And as we look at this other America, we see it as an arena of blasted hopes and shattered dreams. Many people of various backgrounds live in this other America. Some are Mexican Americans, some are Puerto Ricans, some are Indians, some happen to be from other groups. Millions of them are Appalachian whites. Probably the largest group in this other America in proportion to its size in the population is the American Negro. The American Negro finds himself living in a triple ghetto, a ghetto of race, a ghetto of poverty, a ghetto is to deal with this problem, to deal with this problem of the two Americas. We are seeking to make America one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
As we can see, this is B-Chad's, this our first show, folks. This our first show. And I am a little nervous, so I'm asking that my listeners bear with me as we move through this journey together. Introducing myself again, I am B-Chad. And a little bit about me, I am in the education field. I am a college professor, and I teach in the field of criminology. But more so, what I feel is more important for us tonight is to know that I am an African-American male, a black male, and I am highly concerned about the future of our families, our kids, our neighborhoods, economically, spiritually, financially. Just the holistic identity of what we've been fighting for when it comes to equity and equality. I want us to have conversations on the history because the information and education is very important to understand where we've come from. I want us to have conversations around the current state of Black America. And also discuss what would the future look like. And I want to do this through the lens of the tribute on MLK Day. So I just played just a portion of a segment from one of Dr. King's, again, what I would call one of his greatest speeches. But he's talking about two different Americas. And some of us are apprehensive or afraid to have the conversation. But we're going to have it here on this Blog Talk Radio show. We will be taking guest callers later on the show. For those of you that have your computers up, it's listed. But I'm going to provide the number to you now. 646-716-5871. So the first part of the show, we're going to do what we call Black History Flashback. And the flashback today is MLK Day. How did we get here? What were some of the struggles in order for us to honor one of the greatest people when it comes to an activist and fighting for our rights? Dr. King was born on January 15, 1929, in Atlanta, Georgia. Sadly, Dr. King was assassinated on April 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. It took 15 years after his assassination for the federal government to recognize that he was well deserving of a national holiday. In 1983, by the hands of President Ronald Reagan, Congress passed legislation for MLK Day. It wasn't until 1986 that the holiday was actually observed. So we're here tonight celebrating the 30th anniversary of MLK Day. I did say federal holiday. All the states, they were not too excited about joining in and giving state paid employees a day off to honor Dr. King. The last state to observe the holiday is my home state of South Carolina. And I know I have a number of listeners out there from South Carolina. I'm not sure how many of us actually knows that. They didn't join the fight. They didn't join the federal legislation until the year 2000. So we're actually celebrating only 16 years in a state that I grew up and experienced some of the challenges that Dr. King committed his life to eradicate. Why celebrate Dr. King? Why have MLK Day? Today, MLK Day celebrates the life and achievements of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was one of the most well-noted, influential American civil rights leaders. He taught us the values of courage, dignity, humanity, and service. He was the leader of nonviolent protests in order to get equality for African Americans. The Dr. King holiday honors the life and contributions of America's greatest champion of racial justice and equality, the leader who not only dreamed of a colorblind society, but who also led a movement that achieved historic reforms to help make it a reality. Dr. King wasn't just about talking, folks. He was about initiating conversations and only settled and never settled until there were programs and interventions and strategies to eradicate racial segregation. On this holiday, we celebrate the values of equality, tolerance, and interracial sister and brotherhood. Now, the next segment of the show, we've entitled it The Issues. Now, this is where we get real serious and have some of those honest, uncomfortable conversations that Dr. King spoke of each and every day. We're going to try to incorporate his legacy into the topic that we've chosen today, which is centered on education. We aren't going to just talk about one type of education from school systems or public or private or higher educational institutions. We're going to talk about formal and informal education. Now, let me tell you what I mean about informal education. Informal education is what I consider those aunts, those uncles, those school teachers, those pastors, those coaches, those mentors, those role models in the neighborhood, and sometimes even, as we all have, that good old drunk uncle that loves you enough to tell you what experiences their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, leading back to most often slavery, and how that has impacted some of the psychological degradation that we as a black community experiences. Keep in mind that we're not always formal, quote, institutions that house black Americans when it came to education. So this is a part of our history. We all heard the conversations about doing slavery where there were candlelight readings, having to sneak to teach other how to read, where people were actually, slaves were actually facing death if they were caught reading or even teaching others to read. But they did it. They put themselves in jeopardy because they knew the value of what education would be, not just tomorrow, but for the entire future generation yet to come. I carry this same type of accountability, as well as some of my listeners. So I thank you again for joining in tonight to speak on it. How do we continue the legacy of Dr. King in education? We're going to start with informal. I'm going to talk about manners. Yes, I did say I was from South Carolina, and it matters. There was nothing like my mother coming home telling me that she ran into Miss Smith, Miss Jones, And that conversation said, son, they told me they saw you in the store today, and you were very respectful. Manners, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Knowing when it's your turn to speak. Understanding that respecting others without a form of education can actually open a number of doors and take you very far. Formal. It's nitty gritty. Let's get to it. What's happening in our school systems with our black kids? What's going on? There's been a number of activists, including Dr. King, fighting against racial segregation. We know Brown v. Board in 1954, federal legislation that says that we need to integrate schools. We often hear conversations on how much that has actually benefited the black community. There are even conversations that says maybe integration has not been the best route. Currently, our young kids have been suspended, expelled. More referrals have been written. They face harsher disciplinary practices than any other racial ethnic group there is. Black kids compared to whites in the United States are being subjected to zero tolerance. Now, when you hear that term zero tolerance, what exactly does it mean? How does it impact you? You're telling me that you don't want to tolerate my identity. You don't want to tolerate my cultural values. You don't want to tolerate my behavior. Black kids are being suspended at a disproportionate rate compared to white kids for the same behavior that white kids are participating in. I do some reading like you all do, and I consistently hear this conversation around, I felt threatened. They're afraid of 5 and 6 year old kids in elementary school because they stood up and they projected their voice so that someone could hear them. I'm confused, folks. We're talking today on the legacy of Dr. King, and we still are having conversations on why black kids aren't getting a fair education. School is supposed to cultivate, nurture our kids. When you look at the development, right? Once they leave home and they're old enough to go to school, that's where they spend the most time. That's where the biggest influence in their lives, not excluding family, is. It's not peer-to-peer yet. That comes later. So imagine the hope that possibly is taken away from them by some of our administrators, our teachers, and some of us. So I want my listeners to listen in close. We will be taking calls a little later, but I really want to know what you feel and what do you see as the former education system and informal education impact on black kids. One of the major issues that continues to come up. Oh, and I forgot to mention that those rates, those statistics that I mentioned about black kids being suspended at higher rates, 13 states, and I must quote this, 13 states in the South are responsible for more than half of those disparate numbers. Ironically, those are the states where Dr. King was doing the most fighting. Those were the states where the struggle of segregation was the most difficult to attack and get overturned. Note, 30 years later, some of the same issues are on our doorstep again. I want to talk about a term that we often hear called school-to-prison pipeline. School-to-prison pipeline is a term that some say our school systems, in connection with the zero tolerance policy, is setting our kids up to go to prison. There's research out there that says that they are using third grade test scores to build prisons for the future, meaning the third grade test scores, be it low, medium, or is an indicator that eventually these young black kids are going to be criminals, as it's defined in the literature. That is alarming. That is terrifying. I'm not sure, but I know some of my listeners out there, and some of my listeners know me very well. And you tell me what was going on in your life in the third grade, and if that was a good determination of whether or not you was going to be delinquent or a so-called criminal when you turned 21. Some of this stuff, we have to be more accountable and responsible for what's being said about our babies. We gotta, and I mean gotta, we gotta take more accountability to dispel the myths. We gotta take more accountability for their lives. How many third graders can you actually say you can look in their eyes into their soul and say, what? Yep, there's my future lifer right there. Not from where I'm sitting. From where I'm sitting is an opportunity to pour in. It's an opportunity for the informal education to be given. Hope. Turn some lights on in the young man. Turn some lights on in the young lady. Tell her how much she's appreciated. Tell her how much she's valued. Laugh with her. Hug her. Build trust. And I guarantee you, the rapport will follow. Informally, in our community, we're walking past little third grade kids as if they've done something not to deserve our attention. That's on us, folks. That's on us. That's the informal part of this conversation. Oh, yeah, we're going to challenge. We're going to challenge. That's what it's about. We're going to build some character. Some of us might get a little uncomfortable. And can you imagine that third grade whose test scores are being used, the interactions that he or she is having in these school systems? How uncomfortable is she? I know I'm talking to adults. Don't go nowhere. Come on, chime in. This is an open conversation, and I'm going to show you how value can be applied. Informal education. One thing we must do, we got to look in the mirror, folks. We got to look in the mirror and look at how do we get to this point. Michael Jackson, let's start where? With the man in the mirror. No gender bias there, of course. Oftentimes, and I can remember when I was growing up, man, I always said I wasn't going to do it. I'd be with my friends. We'd be going through the neighborhood, going to different homes. And the conversation would always come up about how bad we were. I don't know what to do with y'all kids. Y'all ain't like the kids from before. Y'all ain't like us. Well, I'm a little older now, as well as those same friends that I was touring the neighborhood with, receiving that informal education. And I'll be doggone if some of us ain't saying the same thing we hated to hear, how bad our babies are today. Stop it. Stop it. Because unconsciously, what you're buying into is a lack of hope for the future. You're repeating some of the same stereotypical myths that mainstream society wants us to buy into. If they can get you to believe that there is no future for black kids, then you tell me what investment you're going to make in them. You tell me what school district you're going to stand in front of and wait for the superintendent to appear to say, hey, whether I have a child in this school district or not, I'm going to have an indirect or direct impact on me, my neighborhood, my community, my family, if something doesn't change where these kids get seen as kids. Kids, sponges. We should be pouring water, and I mean water in the terms of education and life and hope and dreams. We should be pouring into them instead of asking them to pour into us. We got to understand at 10, really? Come on, y'all. Tell me how we putting so much pressure on their shoulders and we are the adults. I know what some of y'all saying now because we homeboys. We colleagues, some family members. Man, B-Chad, you always talking about not holding people accountable. Not true, folks. But I don't just only want the kids to be held accountable. I want my adults to be held just as accountable times 10. Informal education, love, hope, dreams. I personally, if I may share, have no fine art skills, none. I personally have access to a guitar now and am learning how to play the guitar. What does this have to do with the legacy in education, right? Because I can remember in my neighborhood when I was a child, if you wanted to sing, that wasn't manly. If you wanted to dance, go to the Nutcracker, that wasn't manly. If you wanted to draw, that wasn't manly. And now as I sit trying to grow as an individual, wanting to hit muddy waters, wanting to play some of Stagger Lee's music, just wondering how many lives, how many black lives, how many kids' hopes and dreams did that way of thinking take away from in my neighborhood, in my community, in my school? Let's stop, folks. This generation here is no worse than any generation before. Got to look at who's presenting the information. You got to look at the media. As I sit here through social media having a conversation with you, I too am accountable. But we got to look at this from a much more in-depth perspective. If you watch a television segment, right, the news segment, a 30-minute segment, they're consistently pushing you in the first 4 minutes the worst news information possible. Why do you think that is? That's that hook. That's that hook to get you psyched up, psyched in, buying in, that we should fear each other. And I mean really fear each other. And when they put those portraits up of the people in the first 4 minutes that are supposed to be so scary, what do you think consciously they're asking you to buy into? This is who I should run from when I see them at the store. When I pull up at the red light, this is why I should wind my window up, lock my doors. Sometimes walking in the mall, a little tight clutch on the purse. Stop blaming the next generation and do something about it, folks. And we'll talk about some of the suggestions that B-Chad has as we continue to speak on it today. I do want to bring a much more personal incident up, and I mean personal as in geographical location. I want to talk about the incident in South Carolina. The incident at Spring Valley High School in Columbia, South Carolina, in October 2015. I talk a lot. and I engaged in this conversation with different walks of life and my good friends, my homeboys, fraternity brothers, colleagues. It was deep because once I saw this video, it stirred up emotion. And I'm not sure who's listening, who wasn't bothered by a grown man picking up and flipping a desk on a child. Regardless, folks, regardless, she was sitting down and a desk was flipped over. Are we thinking about her welfare? Are we thinking about the safety? Are we thinking about what? Fearing her. She's a threat. So it doesn't matter what I do to her. We need to control her. This young lady ended up being arrested because she refused to listen to the teacher. Hey, school teachers, SROs, school resource officers, they aren't there to control your classrooms. They are not there to come into the classroom to do your job. I, too, am in education. It's my responsibility to deal with the behaviors of the students in my classrooms. Let's stop reaching out to law enforcement to come do the job that we've been challenged to do. That's why you signed up, because you love those kids. You love the kids. Let's increase our ethic of care, concern for their education. Suspending them, expelling them, that removes them from the classroom. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not exactly sure where I would be if at the age of 13 and 14, I was spending more time at home at 11 a.m. or 1 p.m. than I was in the place that was going to put me on a track to be successful. What do you expect a 14-year-old kid to do if he's suspended every day? 5 days away from school? Imagine 5 days away from your job. What would your supervisor say to you when you came back? How much work would you have piled up on your desk? Now, we know it's not just about getting up going to school for these black kids either. They're coming to school with a great deal on their shoulders. Again, the issues that Dr. King wanted to eradicate, to give them a real shot. But this young lady in Columbia, South Carolina, was arrested, and I believe the offense was felony assault on law enforcement officer. This isn't just happening in Columbia, South Carolina, Spring Valley High School. This same school-to-prison pipeline, this same zero tolerance for our kids is a nationwide problem. It's happening on a daily. And some of us are contributing to it. Some of us, we letting it happen on our watch. It's not cute. It's not cute at all to see this on the local news, the national news, and then get in our little semicircles and have bull sessions and talk about it amongst ourselves. That's not what the day is about when we're honoring the legacy of Dr. King. I'm challenging you, when these situations come up, we got to organize. We got to fight and advocate for education. We can deal with some behavior, but think about removing them away from that classroom. I'm going to come back to that again. I'm also going to come back to this generation is worse than the last generation. Some of y'all went to middle school with me out there, and I know y'all can remember this story, but there was often times where some of the homeboys, they had our coach, they had him lock himself up in the office, afraid to come out of his office because they was going to put the wood to him. And I'm just being real. But for some reason, when fights occurred in our school, you went to the office. You had an opportunity to present why you had to fight. And then there was an administrator that would contact your parents, and then they would make a decision about, right and wrong. Did you have to defend yourself? Well, maybe you don't need to go home for as many days. To me, that's tolerance. To me, that's caring about what position they put you in order for you to respond with violence. That's wanting to understand what the kid is going through. What was going through your mind to make you hit that person? What was going through your mind not to walk to the office after you got hit and responded? Standing up for yourself. Do we really want to send our kids home? No books, no homework assignments, over a fight? A fight. Kids, can we really expect them to go into that building every day with all their carrying and not have a difference of opinion? Can you imagine a teachable moment? There's a conflict resolution moment, folks. Hey, I understand what you're going through, but it's not okay to put your hands on somebody because you're going through it. Dr. King says, when he speaks of riots in Detroit in 1968, in L.A., Chicago, he said it was a cry out for help. Why aren't we listening to our kids that are crying out for help? That's on us. That's on us. I want to invite my callers. 646-716-5871. I know I'm laying a lot on you. Now I need you to lay something on my listeners. Call in. Tell me what we can do about some of these issues that I've discussed. Tell me how you really feel about our babies in the future. Well, I have some suggestions under what we can do. I've already listed a few of them in terms of the accountability conversation, meaning having more conversations with the kids in the neighborhoods when we're seeing them. Stop telling them that they're the worst, that you're bad, that you won't amount to anything, that there is no future for you. Some of the futures look bleak because we aren't doing our jobs. But they, at a very vulnerable age, may start to believe that. May start to believe that they're not worthy of being successful, of being happy, or of a good quality education. We have to get more involved in our schools. Meaning, parents, go to the PTA meetings. When a teacher sends home a referral or administrator sends home a letter saying your child has been suspended, challenge it. Read the student handbook. Understand your rights about procedural justice. Was my child taken through the proper channels for this decision to be made? Get involved in the community. Create some local organizations. Have town hall meetings. Have people come out and discuss the current state of education in your school system, in your high school, in your school district, locally. Petitions. Beat them with the pen. Dr. King was huge on nonviolence, and we want to continue that legacy. But you can sign up for petitions through numerous activist organizations to have your voice heard. Everyone can't have the same position in the fight. Some of us don't have the financial resources to donate to local organizations. I get it. Some of us don't have the best to be there. But with the increase of technology and social media, and now Speak On It, Blog Talk Radio, there's a way for your voice to be heard. There's an opportunity for inclusion. Go to your PTA meetings. Go sit in the school board meetings. Those are the folks that are making the legislative decisions. It happens at the school board level, not in the schools. The school board meetings. We should be there. Also, I used to often hear that two of the best professions ever was preaching and teaching. I need more of us in education, folks. I need more third grade, fourth grade, eighth grade, 10th grade school teachers that look like the population we're trying to serve. We're not excluding anyone that doesn't. We want to include more, which often was a part of Dr. King's message. I'm not asking for anyone to lose their job. I'm asking for more jobs, for our students can have someone that's representative of them in the room fighting for their rights. Where are my callers? Again, I'm sitting, I'm waiting. I need to hear from the community. Area code 646-716-5871. We're waiting to hear. I'm sorry, I just took a moment. I was hoping that the call line was going to be lighting up, but not yet. So, as many of you know, I can talk, so we'll keep having the conversation. Well, the last part, segment of our show, is called Black Achievement Shoutout. And we're going to give a shout-out each time we host a show to, doesn't have to be a person, not an individual, but an achievement in furthering the legacy of Dr. King. Tonight, the Black Achievement Shout-Out Award goes to Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter was formed in 2012 after the death of Trayvon Martin. It was started, I'm not sure how many people know this, by three black females. Way to go, sisters. Opal Tometi, Alicia Garza, and Patrice Cullors are all co-founders. Black Lives Matter is working to rebuild the black liberation movement. They call it a racial justice project for black people. When we say Black Lives Matter, we are broadening the conversation around state violence to include all of the ways in which black people are intentionally left powerless at the hands of the state. We're talking about the ways in which black lives are deprived of our basic human rights and dignity. Black Lives Matter is open to a variety of strategies for addressing systemic racism and doesn't claim that one tactic is more effective than another. I want to quote, want you to really hear this. Black Lives Matter doesn't mean other lives don't matter. The message has always been from a place of love for black people and love for our society. Black Lives Matter also includes groups such as LGBT community, which have sometimes been left out of social justice conversations in the black community. Dr. King stood for humanity, folks. all the Black Lives Movement has been able to have an impact on national politics with presidential candidates discussing the movement specifically. This is so rare. This does not happen that a grassroots organization is included in presidential candidates' conversations. We got to move on this now, folks. Move on it now. So I really want to say thank you to the three sisters and applaud Black Lives Matter as being the first recipient of the Black Achievement shout out on Speak On It. We have callers. Good evening. Welcome to Speak On It. Who am I speaking with? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Chad.
Hi, what's your name and where are you from?
Yes, this is Charlene. I'm calling from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi, Charlene. Thank you for joining Speak On It tonight.
Yes.
What would you like to share with us? Speak on it.
Yes, I have a question for you. I'm listening to you, and I hear that you're saying that we have to, discuss his legacy and what we need to do now and what we owe in the struggle for social justice and equality?
Yes.
Can you tell me your opinion and exactly what you feel we owe and what we should do, as leader, trying to become leaders and, step up and do what needs to be done in our community?
Yes, Charlene, that is a great question, and thank you for calling in, and thank you for having such a profound question for our listeners. One of the first steps that I think we need to do starts with a mindset, and that mindset is believing in our kids much more than what we do. We often have negative conversations, negative connotations around our youth. You know, we're more focused oftentimes with how their pants are being worn, how their hair is being grown, how it's being represented in mainstream society in lieu of focusing on the most important things, and that's building hope in them to believe that their identity is beautiful, that they are too children of the one above. And I really want us to start with what is the mindset and how do we feel about Black youth today? Secondly, get involved. Find out what is going on in your community and face the injustices head on. What can I do from where I'm sitting in Columbia, South Carolina? City council, school board, local organizations that's involved with Department of Juvenile Justice. Be active. Also, be informed. We got to read more. We got to read more about what is being written and what is being passed down in these school systems that are misrepresenting our babies. And also, on a more local but yet national level, we got to get out and vote. We know what mass incarceration has done to the Black male, to the Black female, the Black family in the community, and their rights have been taken away. For those of us that have those rights, we got to vote to get the people that are the best representation of the issues concerning our kids. Thank you, Charlene, for your call. We're going to take another call. Speak on it.
Yes, Dr. Stark.
Yes, yes, yes. Who am I speaking with and where are you from?
This is Ashley calling from Loganville, Georgia.
Oh, welcome, Ashley. Shouts out to Loganville, Georgia. Speak on it.
Thank you. First of all, let me say congratulations to you on your blog talk radio.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank you for your suggestions on, what we can do to get involved. I know for me, a lot of times that's the issue. Just knowing exactly what to do, what I can do on a local level to really make an impact.
Right.
But I have a couple of questions for you. Really two-part question. So if Dr. King was alive today, what type of grade do you think Dr. King would give us as a nation, you know, regarding our progress in social justice?
I think Dr. King, with his calm approach and temperament, I think he would grade us a C minus. I think that there's been some growth that we must acknowledge, that there isn't the same structural impediments on paper per se, but I think he would be very disjointed about our action on the ground as a Black community and what we're doing to progressively move our kids and our future forward. I really think he would grade us a C minus. And for those that, all my quantitative number folks, a C minus is a 70 out of 100. Great question. Speak on it.
Yeah, how's it going, Dr. Starks? Sean Galladay from D.C. How's it going?
Oh, Dr. Galladay, thank you for calling in tonight. We do appreciate it.
No problem,
getting some
man.
Attention out of the nation's capital.
Would
you like
no
to share
doubt.
With
it's
us,
definitely Dr. Galladay? A very timely. This is a very timely discussion, man. Definitely in the wake of the celebration across the country with our king. I definitely appreciate this. I think you hit on a lot of key points with participation. You know, I think I'm at the point now where I probably have more questions than answers. I mean, obviously, you know, and I know we both probably studied these issues ad nauseum. But I think one of the key solutions is participation. So I think if you're talking about stemming that systemic tide of having so many, you know, say, for instance, in St. Louis, where I'm from, you have four of the largest schools where 80 to 90% of the students are going to are Black, are going to schools that at some point between 2010 and 2014 were either unaccredited or provisionally accredited, you know, which suggests that there's a whole lot of host of issues underwriting those various different statuses you know, between those times. You have the school systems where you have more, I guess, progressive or higher performance school systems willing to accept these students, but yet they're accepting these students for the dollars that they bring and not necessarily the educational value, you know, or the educational needs or helping them address their educational needs. So in that sense, you know, you have bad educational policy because you have these students who basically just been commodified, right?
Right. Right.
And as you
right.
and I know, that if you create these quote unquote effective policies for these disadvantaged populations and they, you know, persist over time, it basically further disenfranchises them from the system. You know, so I think another key, a more systemic a resolution, but formulating effective policies that manage the expectations in terms of what success is. Right? So it's far too often, I see it in the work that I've done, where you have these quote-unquote policymakers creating these policies that are really ineffective, and they're ineffective because they're rooted in bad science,